It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, another broadcast from Plague America. It is the fifth day of May, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. It's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, real-time, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time and all times in between and on either end. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob. And if you pick out a screen name and a password and pop into the chat room, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and House of Roberts and Squeaky and more to wander by eventually, I've no doubt. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, and Mr. Bill,
oh no,
has just entered the chat room. Hi, Mr. Bill. Speaking of which, make sure you sign up for the RSS feed and take Dr. Bill's program, or pick it up at Podbean, or best of all, at HeadOn.live, because Dr. Bill's been doing some fantastic work of late, and of course, he goes live Monday, when possible. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Let's see, I did the Hi, I'm Bob part. Okay, good. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude because it is the Horn community that keeps The Horn on the air, keeps this conversation going, and has kept it going for lo these many years. And so thanks go out to our fifth day of the month subscribers at PayPal. And that would be thanks to, sometimes machines are faster than others. There we go. So thanks go out this afternoon to, thank you. Thank you to Bernice, Batty Boop. Thank you to James in Illinois. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. I hope things are getting better for you, Kevin. Thank you all most kindly. So where do we stand? Well, we're moving into the first full week of May, and the fundraising goal for this evening is $254. So thank you very kindly. Flavio says Happy Corona Day. Right, it is Cinco de Mayo. It only became a big holiday in the United States. It wasn't particularly much of a thing in Mexico. It was just one battle, but it took on a life of its own when, as is always the case, people figured out a way to make a buck off of it in the new 90 states of Merca, because that's how we do things. Oh, that's bizarre. Okay. And a couple of notes just to get us started for the evening, afternoon, whatever we're calling this, for the program. How's that? Had a note from our buddy Gary in the greater New York area reminding us, this pandemic mimics many of our horror or monster movies. Remember The Thing or The Blob, even Godzilla? Godzilla! Where the monster is somehow unleashed on humanity and seems unrelenting with no way to combat it? With the protests urging the reopening of our economy and lifting restrictions on businesses and public gatherings, I can't help but think of Jaws. Mayor Larry Vaughn wants to reopen the beaches on Amity Island, even though there is this man-eating monster threatening the community. He's got business leaders and townspeople behind him. Chief Brody, representing the Let's Not Get Ahead of Ourselves, This Could Put More Lives at Risk crowd. I just have this tremendous feeling of dread that the shark is still in the waters, Gary says. But some people just don't give a shit. But it's not like it's filled with hungry man-eaters. It's not just one shark. Imagine that when the shark eats a person, he multiplies by 6 or 10 or whatever until the waters are filled with hungry man-eaters. Why aren't people content to wait on the beach until the waters show the smallest indication that we at least have less sharks in them? Less sharks is always good, and recommends to us an article by Jill Lepore at The New Yorker called What Our Contagion Fables Are Really About. Indeed, I browsed it earlier. I'm going to give it the time it deserves after the program. Of course, of the many things that we will be discussing this evening, probably the best place to begin with Trump-tanic Tuesday. Begin with some news of those well-meaning folks who are shrieking full speed ahead, flank speed, ramming speed, rig for collision. We're gonna show that iceberg a thing or two. And so, the fact of the matter is, the models that we did have for the Rona, largely as a function of how badly we've bungled the response, one particular model has doubled what it projects as to how many people will be dead from this plague in the U.S. alone by August. Those numbers have largely changed because of the insistence of spoiled brat babies that we put everybody's lives at risk and reopen the goddamn government and reopen business and reopen the country, even though the data does not support it. At the University of Washington, at their School of Medicine, they have something called the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. Earlier, they were predicting 72,000 fatalities from the Rona. They have upped their prediction to 134,000. Now, bear in mind, this is the model that is the favorite of the White House. And suddenly, of course, it's fake news. Dr. Christopher Murray, is the director of the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. He had a conference call yesterday, and he said that the numbers had gone up to 134,000 primarily because of, quote, premature relaxation of social distancing. premature relaxation. Oh, dear. They're analyzing data from four different cell phone providers, and those cell phone provider data points show that Merca is racing to get out in public again. And between the last week and 10 days, that increase has been dramatic. Jesus. And what's the reason that the MAGAT White House is so fond of that model is because their numbers are about the most optimistic that there are to be had. Jeremy in Vermont points out that model was linked by the CDC's website until this week, when the numbers went up, and now it's not there. Yeah. Yes, Steve in New York says, to the king of the art of word knowing from the Duke of Grammar, see, it should be the data R because data is the plural of datum. Yeah, I know, nerd alert here. I'm aware of that. That's why I said the data points are. Yeah. Oh, Bob, you know nothing, says James in Illinois. These kinds of things should be left to business geniuses like the president, who also has a natural talent for all instant cures that just happen to appear on the horizon. Like I said, I'm still waiting for him to look at Dr. Birx and say, Deborah, could we look at maybe having people wash their hands with boiling water and gargle with boiling water to kind of like kill the virus internally? That deadly goddamn fool. Yeah. In memoriam, says Steve in New York. Maybe I'm being morbid, but I feel the need to let people know this every day. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of May 4th, 2020, 69,921 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of April 4th, 2020, 10,384 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump since April 4th, 2020, 59,537 American people, more in 30 days than in 20 years of the Vietnam War. And we have no means by which to defend ourselves against him. There's a killer on the road. His brain is burning like a toad. Take a long holiday. Let your children play. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. There's a killer on the road. Repeating that lyric, that Jim Morrison lyric from time to time, is just a gentle reminder that this is not, to reference Jaws again, a boating accident. This is something that is real and is a product of determined human activity. I mean, as long as you want to consider Donald Trump to be human. And something goes with all this. And it's one of those kind of oh my God moments. I'm still trying to figure out why the Washington Post published this piece of dreck. It's a joint op-ed from five MAGAT governors. They're all, like I said, Republicans. The governor of Wyoming, Mark Gordon, Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, Kim Reynolds of Iowa, Mike Parson of Missouri, and the aptly named Pete Ricketts of Nebraska have all, they joined together and signed off on a joint op-ed published in the Washington Post in which they roundly and soundly backpatted each other for opening up their economies, because they're super geniuses. It's in the Constitution. Right there where it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Yeah, these deadly dimwits claimed, our collective experience ensures that our contribution toward reopening our nation's economy is stable, safe, and durable. Restarting our economy is not a race to be won, but a cooperative effort. Our approach has created a model for success that can be applied throughout the country. Let's don't and say we didn't. Yeah, you'll note that none of the smart governors signed on to this. Hell, even Jim Follow the Fucking Guidelines didn't sign on to this. Here's the problem. Every one of those states, or 4 out of 5, have the highest per capita coronavirus case rates in the entire United States. Yeah, it just kind of had to be that way, didn't it? I mean, we didn't even have to guess. These five geniuses have said, we're open for business. And soon, the funeral homes in those states, Missouri, Iowa, Arkansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, will be more open for business than they've ever been before. Because these dangerous menaces to public safety are hell-bent on killing their own citizens and turning their states into laboratories. That's my melanoma Trump impression. Into laboratories in which the virus can grow and thrive and spread. And consequently, that's one of the reasons that we're up to 134,000 in the University of Washington model from 72,000. The fools. The mad fools. On the other hand, as compared to the University of Washington model, the Johns Hopkins model is looking at 3,000 deaths per day by June. So June has 30 days. 3 times 3 is 9. 3 times 30 is 90. 30 times 3,000 is 90,000 deaths just in June. Now, I'm not trying to be a little ray of fucking sunshine here. I get it. But we do ourselves no favors if we pretend that reality isn't what reality is. Lord God. And the reality is it's going to get worse. So please, every night I close the program and I say, stay home, stay safe, avoid maggots as if they are disease-bearing vermin, because they are. Jesus. Only 4 states show reducing numbers of the Rona. Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, and, wait for it, West Virginia. But guess why we show reducing numbers? At least in West Virginia, it's because we're not testing worth a shit. And it's because people don't want to get tested because they are terrified of what will happen to them if they test positive. They're terrified of being warehoused or sent away somewhere to die, or even if they survive, never being able to crawl out from under the medical debt because they cannot afford it. And here in almost level West by Cold Trump Genius Day, and I must confess, in the last few days, I have seen more cars with South Carolina plates and Florida plates and, God, plates from all over. And I'm like, go the fuck home. Go away. Don't come here yet. We're not ready for you. And you just know they're not going to they're not going to observe social distancing. God, it's so sad. Oh, let's see. Georgia has one of those brain trust governors. Let's look at Georgia's numbers, courtesy of COVID Act Now. Among other things, COVID Act Now notes that a relatively sizable percentage, 10% of COVID tests in Georgia were positive, which indicates that testing in Georgia is not widespread, meaning that many cases may go undetected. And Georgia is on the upslope. And it's not pretty. COVID Act Now predicts that if all restrictions are lifted in Georgia, the hospital overload date will be May 31st, 2020. The infected rate of the population greater than 70%, and 59,000 people will die and be attributable directly to Brian Kemp. Just think, if he hadn't gotten away with purging all of those votes from the voter rolls, if he hadn't gotten away with suppressing all the votes that he suppressed, Stacey Abrams would be governor of Georgia, and those 59,000 people might go on living. But the 59,000 deaths for Brian Kemp, that's not a flaw, that's a feature, because he knows that a huge number of those deaths will come from the African American community. It is genocidal behavior, plain and simple. God Almighty. But today, Clorox Claudius went galumphing out to Arizona, speaking in front of Marine One. He made it pretty apparent that he had no idea where he was going or why. He said, I'm going to Arizona to honor a great state and a great people. He was visiting a Honeywell mask factory. Not that he knew that or remembered that. His steady mental decline is there for everybody to see on a day-by-day basis. The COVIDiots who worship him, well, they were soundly and roundly criticized. Because, among other things, these Arizona Republicans, Senator Martha McSally and two other maggots, I think one of them was, the dentist whose own family doesn't like him, Paul Gosar, Yeah, Martha McSally, Paul Gosar, and Representative Debbie Lasko took a selfie standing in front of Air Force One. They flew along with the president. And not a one of them wearing a mask. And there they are. They worship. They worship Clorox Claudius. But not one of them had enough common decency to mask up, even though he is 74 years old, 75, I'm not sure, and is in one of the biggest risk groups for contracting and having a horrible outcome from the Rona. And it kind of makes you wonder, again, how it is that that man has managed not to get it, considering how he's behaved, how cavalier, how negligent he has been. I got no answers. Oh, but an interesting piece of piece of information. Another clue has filtered into our consciousness. France, the nation of France, has announced that they have discovered when their first case of the Rona emerged in France. February? Nope. January? Nope. December. It was in France in December. Eventually, we're going to find out that this thing was roaring around China a lot earlier than we thought it was. And, you know, I'm just going to sit back and say, well, you know, I mean, we were there first. We got to that first. Because we did. Ah, thank you. Thank you. Freight Train Frank letting me know that Trump is 73. I guess I was just trying to wish him a couple of more happy birthdays, you know. Subject line, the sane people of Kansas, James in Illinois writes, have no doubt that the moron who ran Kansas into the ground would have gleefully signed onto that letter from the five dimwits who built a bonfire at the edge of summer. That's a great turn of phrase, James. I mean, usually we reserve the cowbells for funny stuff, but that's a cowbell for bonfire at the edge of summer. That's downright poetic. And it's the reason it's so good is because it's so evocative. Bonfire at the edge of summer. Oh, by the way, let's check in with COVID Act Now in Virginia. Because they've got a sane governor, they're not going quite as crazy on the reopen. The infection growth rate in Virginia right now is at 1.12. Their positive test rate is 19.4%, meaning that they've probably got low testing. Based on current trends, because Governor Northam is being sane, they're not expecting hospital overload in Virginia, but they're looking at 13,000 dead in Virginia alone. Now, if the spoiled babies, if the petulant piss ants, if the maggots had their way, and they could open, up right now, Virginia could expect 47,000 deaths. Grim business. For some reason or another, they didn't invite Colonel Governor Taint Reeves of Mississippi to join in their little love letter to themselves. No. Maybe that's because Mississippi is still on fire. Mississippi has shit for testing. Their positive test rate is 10.4%. And when they get all reopened up real good, the Colonel Governor Taint Reeves will kill, according to this model, some 15,000 Mississippians. Many of whom will be, and again, for somebody like Taint Reeves, it's a feature, not a flaw, African Americans. And nobody can do anything to protect themselves against the homicidal stupidity of these toe-kissing maggots. Stephen, New York, writes, I have a vested interest in Georgia because I have family there, so I've been watching closely. The worst part about Georgia and the other maggot states and their reluctance, if it is not inability to test, is because they, like their orange shitbag leader, don't want it to hurt their numbers. The only way we will end up knowing is by looking at studies for which you are very familiar. Excess deaths in a relation to past months in years past. I will tell you this much. Nothing better happened to any family member of mine, because if it does, I will not be responsible for what I will do. And I would advise any maggot to be very, very afraid. Sorry if I'm out of line, but I have no more fucks to give. I understand, Steve. Stay safe. Stay home as much as possible. And avoid maggots like the plague, because they are. Oh, dear. Columbia, South Carolina is the home of the University of South Carolina. David in South Carolina sends along a picture from a little neighborhood in Columbia near the university called Five Points. Ah, Jesus. He says it's a little blurry, but I think you can make it out. Yep, I can make it out. All kinds of little co-eds, all just standing right up next to each other, right on top of each other. Got their cute little cut-off shorts on and their summertime tops, and they're standing in the warm, warm sunshine and probably virusing all over each other. You know, I think there's a little bit of historic irony in this kind of thing. Because 155 years ago, 160 years ago, those self-same states, your South Carolinas, your Virginias, your Georgias and Alabamas, happily sacrificed the lives of their working poor on what became known as the Lost Cause. So it's not like they don't have a history of doing this to their own people. Jesus. But let's not pretend it's only in the Confederate States. Mike DeWine has tried to keep Ohio from absolutely catching fire. He has been praised for some of what he has done. once again, it's the same story in practically every state. Limited testing. They've got a 13% positive rate. And, of course, the maggots, the spoiled children who would have surrendered to the Japanese and the Germans had they been around back in 1941, 42, they want the state reopened immediately. For instance, what was his name? A member of the Ohio House of Representatives. State Representative Nino Vitale, he's been throwing pissy fits over Mike DeWine's handling of the crisis since Mike DeWine started handling the crisis. And because he is a Trumptanic intellect, he issued a statement on Facebook saying, that this is the greatest nation on earth. Huh. Where have we heard that before? The greatest country on the history of the world on earth, now forever in the universe under God. This is the greatest nation on earth, founded on Judeo-Christian principles. One of those principles is that we are all created in the image and likeness of God. That image is seen the most by our face. So he ain't going to wear no mask. Because God doesn't wear a mask. Never mind that the invisibility of God is the greatest mask ever told. Jesus, these dangerous, stupid people. If only we could put them somewhere. And he attacked Dr. Amy Acton. You remember we talked about her last night. She's the head of the public health effort in Ohio. God. And you'll recall that armed fiends, armed freaks, were brandishing their freedom protectors outside her home over the weekend. And Representative Nino Vitale said, "It is time to do what Preble County did. Ignore the unelected Dr. Acton's orders. Open your counties now before it's too late. This is not based on logic. This is based on fear and propaganda. And every statistical data-driven study in the last 2 weeks says death counts are low, the models were wrong, and this is more like the flu." God damn it! They're killers. No more nor less than if they were pointing guns at people, which, by the way, people who think like Dr. like Representative Nino Vitale have done. And so we have to go to Orrville, Ohio. Our buddy John up in Pennsylvania, Bamistan, Bania, shared a photo with me. It comes from Orrville, Ohio, and a business there called Gioninos. Gioninos Pizzeria. Now, the stupid bastards who own Gioninos Pizzeria in Orrville, Ohio, they didn't just get out a sheet of paper and write something on it with a Sharpie and stick it in the window. No, they ordered up a pre-printed sign that fills almost their entire window. And it's got their logo on it, some little dude with a pizza split, carrying a pizza. I'm kind of hungry for pizza now, damn it. but not Giannino's pizza. You couldn't get me, and my beloved wife, my beloved Agnes, spent some of her childhood in Orrville, Ohio. That's the home of like Smucker's or something. Yeah, Smucker's. And I think, maybe there's a significant Mennonite community there, perhaps. Not sure. But Agnes has talked fondly of her time in Orrville. You couldn't get Agnes through the doors of this place either, Giannino's Pizzeria. Because their great big sign that takes up almost the entirety of their storefront window says, "We will not force patrons to wear PPE. Please reference the U.S. Constitution," you know, right there next to where it says, "Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Toxic, damned fools. Jesus. I mean, what do you think about a restaurant that says that they won't ask people to protect themselves and each other? I mean, doesn't that kind of make you wonder if back there where they're making the pizzas at Giannino's Pizzeria, that maybe there's some dude, and he's like got the sniffles, and he's like, and he rubs his hand on his nose and gets it nice and snotty, and then goes to start spinning your pizza dough. Or maybe you're sitting there working your pizza dough and building your pizza, putting on the sauce and the cheese and the whatever. And he's just kind of dribbling from the mouth. Because if you won't take basic health precautions in a pandemic, what confidence can one have that they were even washing their fucking hands when it wasn't a pandemic? Damn. And, you know, I guess this is all in line with their God Emperor, because he said, Clorox Claudius says,
"To reopen the economy, some lives are going to have to be sacrificed. Not mine. Not mine. Not precious Iwanka or Elmer's glue-faced Jared. Not Trader Tot. And not Eric the Lesser, Smarter, Not One. But some sacrifices are going to have to be made." And along the way, we get an idea just exactly who those sacrifices might very well be. Sure. And we get it. We get that idea from the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's not pretty, but it's typical. It's oh so typical. I'm pulling up the story now. Yeah, she's a real Lulu. And she has declared that, some people are just going to have to die
according to Republican Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Patience D. Roggensack. I'm terribly sorry. I have to tell you, you've got an inoperable case of Roggensack. No, that Solon, that leading light of the law in Wisconsin, Patience Roggensack, during a hearing in having to do with the fact that some spoiled, rotten, tantrum-throwing Republican baby is giving Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers hell for his stay-at-home orders. Well, Chief Justice Patience D. Roggensack said that in response to a lawyer who was defending a stay-at-home order for Brown County, Wisconsin, and had noted that the disease was spreading from urban areas into rural areas. Oh, God. I just get so damnably tired of the never-ending racism from these punk-ass thugs. Let's have it from her in her own filthy words. It's almost enough to make you think that that this country needs a big old general strike. A really big general strike. You know, they are who we thought they were. They're never going to be anything less. They're killers, filled with absolute and utter disdain for anyone who isn't them. It's disgusting. Patience Roggensack.
Due to the meatpacking, though, that's where the Brown County got the flare. It wasn't just the regular folks in Brown County.
Got that? People who work in meatpacking plants aren't regular folks. People who go to work every day, work side by side in slaughterhouses and meat mills. I guess they're some sort of Untermenschen. Some sort of children of a lesser god. Not good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians like Patience D. Roggensack. They're not regular Brown County folks, because maybe they're brown folks. That comment by itself, standing alone, should be sufficient to formulate a judicial complaint against Patience D. Roggensack, in an effort to remove her from the bench. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned Amy Acton and that shitbird Nino Vitale telling people to ignore the medical advice of a trained medical professional who has a working understanding of how pandemics and epidemics work. Well, the dangerous plague rats have gone back to Dr. Amy Acton's home, where one sign was visible, and it said, Jewish leaders, John 7:1. John 7:1 reads, After this, Jesus traveled around Galilee. He wanted to stay out of Judea, where the Jewish leaders were plotting his death. Yeah. Because all this shit is baked in. And so, yesterday the protesters were back. One of them had a sign that said, Amy Acton is not my doctor! 40 assholes showed up at her home. Screaming even louder than before. Governor Mike DeWine said, please leave her alone. They said, the hell with that, and went back to try to intimidate her, and not even try, but to succeed in terrorizing her. No arrests for terroristic behavior, curiously. And by the way, that asshat Nino Vitale... He called her a globalist. And globalist is one of those little buzzwords that the very fine people, you know, the Nazis, use these days to describe. They just have to look for different ways to say, Jew. The scumbag Vitale said, Your basic human rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness do not come from an unelected globalist health director who signed the order in the dark of night. Your basic human rights are inalienable and cannot be bought, sold, traded, or taken from you. Well, at least Vitale didn't say that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness were in the Constitution. James Pash is the regional director in Cleveland of the Anti-Defamation League. He said it is outrageous for anybody to target Dr. Acton for her faith or who she is, and anti-Semitism has no place in the state of Ohio. Dr. Acton should be applauded for her hard work in trying to save the lives of Ohioans, and we call out any anti-Semitic or hateful protests. Well, there's where you made your mistake, Mr. Pash. It rather obviously has a place in the state of Ohio, because Ohio has a place in it for these filthy, rotten, Nazi dirtbags. Don't call them out. Call for their arrest. Call for the arrest and conviction on charges of terrorism for these people who are, wait for it, doing terrorism. By the way, James in Illinois reminds us, if you're rolling out a pizza crust and you feel a sneeze coming on, would it hurt? Sneeze on the bottom of the crust. The 450-degree oven will kill the germs. Time check. Eastern time zone. Have some pizza, so long as it's not Giannino's.
Yeah, I might get me a pizza after the program. I don't know.
And speaking of Giannino's pizza, Brother Deacon Asa reminds us that the prophet Jerry Seinfeld, peace be upon him, saw this coming all the way back in the pie episode in 1994. If you recall, the proprietor, Poppy, wipes his ass, comes out of the stall, tells Jerry he's going to make a hell of a pizza for Jerry and his daughter, Audrey. He then walks out to the kitchen without washing hands. Funny, I would have thought that was a Simpsons episode, but because everything is a Simpsons episode. It's like they have a special view into the future. The Roggen sack, Steve in New York says, hey, didn't one of those come with the flageolet or the Knuten valve that you bought for the Horn Studio? I didn't have the money, so I couldn't opt for the Roggen sack package. It wasn't intentional, but I guess that's how it worked out, isn't it? Suman asks, Lord Farquaad from Shrek? Did you intentionally quote Lord Farquaad from Shrek? Some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I am willing to make. Sounded exactly like Clorox Caligula, though. Well, I think there's an argument to be made that he is Lord Farquaad, which was it's not very far from Farquaad to Fuckwad. I think that was the point. As Steve notes, the regular folks, the Ubermenschen, as opposed to the Untermenschen. Steve's German is far better than mine. Bob, stop telling us how we should have coronavirus with our Giannino's pizza.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Hey, thank you to Jeremy for getting us started. We're now down to $249 to finish. Or not to finish, but $249 to get us up to where we need to be with fundraising this early into May. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully you'll have some company. Good news from Flavio. The FDA has narrowed antibody tests from 200 to 12. Flavio says, whoopee! The FDA will now require test makers to seek emergency use authorization and provide the data within 10 business days. Oh, goody. On the other hand, if you got one of those antibody tests that tested for antibodies by asking you to draw Spunky the Turtle from the back of a matchbook, you might want to think about being retested. Ah, damn. Subject line, and you've heard her referred to, because he adores her. Christine tested positive today. The death cult strikes again, Bob. Dr. Dumbass and Nurse Pants and Nurse Kushner are now the official federal death panel. Christine got a test at the VA when she started getting a runny nose and wasn't feeling so well. They told her it was just a cold the other day, and what do you know, they were wrong. Now they told her to hunker down in place until further notice. I'm going to get masks tomorrow. I'm also going to be calling every goddamn politician I know, state, federal, and local, including Governor Holcomb, the guy that was chosen by 12 people to run for Mike Pence's governorship. I'm tired of these bastards, Bob. They're killing the people I know and love. I'm not a violent man, but I can sure yell like hell, and I'm not one to shut up, as many of you know. God damn anybody who voted for these bastards, because Hillary would make such a terrible president. I'd feel safer with a bomb strapped to my ass than dealing with these assholes. Okay, Bob, rant over. Now for something a little lighter. I talked with the guys down at the shop, and we're now offering free crucifixions. for any Republicans. That's right. All they have to do is come sign up with us, and we'll get out the nail gun so social distancing can be applied, and I'll be manning the nail gun 24/7 until the job's done. Love you. Your friend Dave in the blind. Dave, please convey our fondest and warmest and most fervent hopes to the lovely Christine. Please. All of our community matters and sends our best wishes one to the other. Stay safe. And hopefully she heals and recovers and recuperates quickly. That's probably a good idea to anticipate that. Another member of the fraternity of Dave, this is Dave number 11. I'm anxiously awaiting, it's in the constitutions, twin brother. It's unconstitutional! Yes, makes perfect sense to me. By the way, I had a note from our buddy Joey up Cleveland way. Remember, Joey is an essential worker. And he's out there on the front lines day in, day out, helping to make sure that we get things like hand sanitizer out to the country. I'm thrilled to pieces to have a couple of bottles. I saw some in Walgreens, formerly Rite Aid, the other day, and snapped up two, one for the vehicle and one for the house. Joey says, Bob, last night Tara Devlin told me that Donald Trump sponsored her on Patreon. See, Bob. Tara is sweet, kind, and nice to everybody, even if they're dumb, ignorant, stupid, slow, i.e. retarded. The word retard means slow. I see it all the time when I play the piano. Bob, you referenced the many maggots last night as virulent. Bob, don't use words that maggots are not familiar with. Oops, ended the sentence with a preposition. For example, if you would have been nice to Pinocchio Joe from Morose County, New Jersey, he might have become a patron just like Donald did for Tara. Because, as we know, Tara never calls these moron assholes names. Not Tara. Now, Bob, you scolded me for fat-shaming Meghan McCain a few weeks ago. Well, Bob, it's not nice to maggot shame either, because they're human beings too, maybe? For instance, maggots think they have feelings for their fellow man persons. They're sentient beings. Oh, wait a minute, I'm getting the maggots confused with the animals. Never mind. Well, anyways, Bob, be gentle with the maggots, because you never know. By the grace of Beelzebub, there might be some maggot or two out there who will see the light, become a Kincaidian, and join all the horny people on the Horn Radio Network. This has been Joey's Journal for the Day of Cinco de Mayo, signed Joey and his pal, Giraffery. I think that's mighty fine. Go on Yelp and leave Giannino's a fine little one-star review. Steve says, I'm going to leave a review for Giannino's Pizza that you get a free side of COVID-19 with any pie. The owner will give you the COVID-19 personally. That's creative. And Steve says, just a check-in and a shout-out to Kevin in Colorado Springs and his kitty cat, and to our dear friend Charlie in Tennessee. We're thinking of you both. Lee in New York simply observes, I never realized how much is in the Constitution. It must be too heavy for one person to lift. Well, the fact that it's too heavy to lift is in the Constitution. Right there with the Pledge of Allegiance and Jesus. I tell you what, let's take a little break here, if you'd like. Well, I mean, I'd like. And if any of you have something you'd like to talk about, you're welcome to jump in. Whoever it is that's dialing in right now, give me a minute. The stress line has become unpaired, so I have to repair it. See, repair. Got it. All right, clever. And by way of announcement, I have a feeling that there are going to be some changes here fairly soon that will make the stress line much more user-friendly. At least I hope so. Don't you dare. Brother Deacon Asa says, I think Joey may be onto something here. We'll start calling ourselves Branch Kincaidians. No. No, and while I'm at it, fuck no. Even if people do write emails calling you guys sycophants, I know better. I get the emails. So while we wait to see if whoever that was that was calling in on the stress line calls back in on the stress line, we'll check out the green news. $249 to catch up with the day's fundraising. And maybe that can go down a little bit and Jeremy can have some company. Thanks, y'all.
It's Tuesday, May 5, 2020.
We will make the energy business great again.
U.S. oil industry gets a bailout after all. U.S. drillers waste enough natural gas to power 7 million homes. Plus,
we continue to be very much focused on the energy system of the future.
Shell Oil announces it will aim to be carbon neutral by 2050.
They better practice their aim. All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The energy business is very important to me.
Really? Is it Donald Trump? Because I don't see you spending much time with renewable energy like wind and solar. I see that you care about coal and oil and all the stuff that's killing the planet. So maybe you mean the money from the coal and oil industry to your campaign is very important to you. There, fixed it for you. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so we've gone through about 3.5 rescue packages from Congress. They chose not to bail out the oil industry, but somehow the oil industry is getting bailed out anyway.
Yes, indeed they are. Hmm. The Federal Reserve has very helpfully changed the rules of its Main Street lending program. That will allow the oil industry to access billions of dollars in financial assistance and allow them to use the money to pay off debt previously not allowed. And it doesn't even require them to retain any employees.
How lucky for them. Must be nice down there on Main Street for all of those multinational corporations.
Environmental groups blasted the special treatment, saying it rewards U.S. drillers for taking on too much debt prior to the pandemic, and it rewards them for overproducing crude even before the pandemic caused oil demand to crash.
So the U.S. government is picking winners and losers, which Republicans used to pretend to hate, at least when it was about helping out the renewable energy industry.
Exactly.
Yep.
The fracking boom's race to overproduce is linked to a major spike in methane in the atmosphere. Methane is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide on shorter timescales. Last year, the Trump administration rolled back regulations requiring the drilling industry to fix methane leaks. Now, a new study from Harvard University finds that drillers have been wasting natural gas, venting it into the atmosphere at much higher rates than previously thought, rather than capturing it to sell, which means they are depriving taxpayers of royalties from gas extracted from the public's lands.
Well, you got to make energy great again.
The new study found that in Texas and New Mexico alone, enough natural gas to supply 7 million homes is being leaked into the atmosphere. It's the largest plume of climate change driving methane pollution ever recorded over a U.S. oil field.
Wow.
And it has a market value of $250 million. $1 trillion.
And they're just letting it blow away.
Yep. And now a different study from Global Carbon Monitors at carbonbrief.org concludes that global methane emissions from fossil fuels are also severely underestimated and could be as much as 40% higher than previous estimates. That means fossil fuel drilling could be a much bigger contributor to climate change than previously thought. That could actually be a plus side rather than natural sources that humans can't control. These are controlled by humans, meaning, quote, that puts more of the emissions under our domain and agency. We can limit emissions of methane to the atmosphere and the warming that they cause.
So we can, we just don't.
Right. At least one major oil company is publicly acknowledging that an extended coronavirus crisis could mean that plummeting oil demand never returns to previous levels.
Sad.
Ben Van Beurden, the CEO of oil giant Royal Dutch Shell, in a recent conference call, announced the company's first dividend cut since the 1940s and was less than optimistic about the oil industry's future.
Will demand ever go back to where it was? That's hard to say. We live a crisis of uncertainty at the moment. We don't know what's on the other side.
Van Beurden reiterated the company's major shift in strategy that was announced in late April.
Shell has to set out a new ambition, become a net zero emissions energy business by 2050. Again, in step with society.
Shell's new strategy focuses on integrating and selling more clean energy. It is the largest global oil and gas company in the world so far to target net zero by 2050. Sustainable investing groups called it a step in the right direction, but critics say Shell's first step must be to stop new drilling projects.
Yeah, what kind of clean energy does Shell Oil sell?
I think they're buying into renewables.
Yeah, well, I'll buy into that when I see it.
Finally, some good news. Here in the U.S., renewable energy is surging past coal and for the first time ever generated a bigger share of the nation's electricity than coal for an entire month, the month of April. Actually, since March 25th, clean solar, wind, and hydropower combined produced more electricity in the U.S. than coal every day for 40 straight days. And as of airtime, is still doing it.
Poor coal. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Softly swaying to that smoky beat down on Main Street.
Hey, it's a Bob Seger song I do like. There's only one Bob Seger song I don't like, and that's the odious Turn the Page, but never mind. Note coming in from Lou, an original Lou idea. That sounds cool. How about if we start a recall petition regarding Trump? I realize it won't have legal effect, particularly with the Supreme Court, but it might be fun. I assume it would be online. You know, Lou, anybody can start a petition at change.org. And it would be interesting, but wouldn't he have a shit hemorrhage if, say, tens of millions of people signed something like that? Or, you know what? Let me modify your original Lou idea, and I won't even ask to share credit. How about a petition at change.org directed at Mike Pence and the members of the cabinet, petitioning them to utilize Section 4 of the 25th Amendment? Now, if that thing got a bunch of legs, it would really drive Clorox Claudius batshit, because he's already losing it. I mean, we've known that, but he lost it some more over the latest ad from the Lincoln Project. A play on the 1984 the 1984 Reagan ad, Morning in America. This one is called Morning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, in America. Oh, wait a minute. Jeremy in Vermont. Stop telling us we're not sycophants, Bob. I was kind of waiting on that one. A little slow on the draw there this time, Jeremy. Stop telling us we're slow on the draw, Bob. Yeah. Oh, where'd it go? There it is. There it is. Thought it might be good to run the, just run the audio from the ad. Because they what they did, the Never Trump Republicans from the Lincoln Project used his own images of American carnage that he used in 2016 and beat him pretty badly over the head with it.
There's mourning in America. Today, more than 60,000 Americans have died from a deadly virus Donald Trump ignored. With the economy in shambles, more than 26 million Americans are out of work. The worst economy in decades. Trump bailed out Wall Street, but not Main Street. This afternoon, millions of Americans will apply for unemployment. And with their savings run out, many are giving up hope. Millions worry that a loved one won't survive COVID-19. There's mourning in America. And under the leadership of Donald Trump, our country is weaker and sicker and poorer. And now, Americans are asking, if we have another 4 years like this, will there even be an America?
Paid for by the Lincoln Project, which is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Now, to be clear, they did not pay us. We gave that one away for free. Because, well, it's truth. Jesus. I mean, every word of it. Stop telling us to stop telling us that we're slow on the draw, Bob. Thank you, Bill. God. Yeah, it's so much fun. Oh, and we got that, and that in turn caused him to have a Twitter meltdown, because of course everything causes a Twitter meltdown. But this next little piece of audio. It's kind of like, oh, I don't know. It's kind of like if Charlie Manson just went on TV and started explaining why he needed to kill people. This little piece of audio it's a confession. It's an admission. See, there's something. Mike Pencilneck Geek has declared that the coronavirus task force, which has never been much in the way of a task force or competent or anything like that. They're winding it down. They don't figure they're planning for there not to be a coronavirus task force by June the 1st. Bear in mind that on June the 1st, that's the first day we expect to start seeing 30,000 or 3,000 deaths per day for the next 30 days. June 1st is the day that we expect to start to move in up that hellish slope of the curve that sees 90,000 Americans dead by July 1st. 90,000 more Americans. But yeah, they're going to wind it down because when the deaths really start spiking, they don't want to be anywhere that they could possibly be questioned for their outrageous incompetence. Journalist Jack Merkinson said, yeah, they're going to declare victory, let thousands die, and hope nobody cares too much. And Trump for Brains admitted today that while he's willing to let Dr. Fauci testify to the Senate, he won't let him testify to the House
because there are a bunch of Trump haters there. They're just Trump haters.
I found it interesting that the conservative multimillionaire broadcaster S.E. Cupp, has finally gotten around to declaring that that Clorox Claudius is in bad shape. It's funny how when after Joe Scarborough mentioned it, and Todd and I were talking about that last night, after Joe Scarborough mentioned it, suddenly it's okay for other millionaires to talk about it. In her case, S.E. Cupp penned an op-ed, and she compared Nitwit Nero to a tantrum-prone toddler. Every parent has warily confronted the hypothetical question, what would you do if you suspected your child was unwell? Not physically, but emotionally unwell or mentally unstable? Imagine learning your teenager, for example, had been yelling demeaning slurs at the girls in his class, harassing them and calling them names, and that he'd been secretly using his social media accounts to go on late-night rants against perceived enemies, attacking their looks, and again, calling them names in unending, seething, rambling posts, or that he'd been increasingly susceptible to bizarre and otherwise implausible conspiracy theories and was spreading them unprompted to anyone who would listen. Among other things, she says, these aren't normal behaviors. They're signs of a person who's lost the ability to manage their emotions. Not only are these behaviors the norm for President Trump, but they seem to have worsened at one of the most precarious and critical times for our country as we face a global pandemic that's killed nearly 70,000 Americans. Less than 2 weeks after unimaginably suggesting injecting disinfectants might help kill off the coronavirus, the past few days have seen him spiral out of control, proving utterly incapable of staying focused on the biggest crisis a president can face. Well, congratulations, S.E. It only took you 3 years, but you've finally caught up with a little independent, listener-centered, audience-centered internet broadcast. But good on you for getting there. So Jim Acosta from CNN asked Clorox Claudius about the phase-out of the coronavirus task force, and, well, this is what happened.
Everything. And
don't you want to hear from
I just want to say that we've done an incredible job on testing. With that being said, we have some additional, including antibody tests coming out, that will even blow these numbers away. But nobody's done the job we've done.
But don't you need to continue to meet with the task force to get this scientific expertise on this pandemic?
We will have certain people, as an example, we have hospitals that we built. We have medical centers that we built. We have people on the task force that focused on that. We have people on the task force that's focused exclusively on ventilators. Well, we have more ventilators now than anybody in the world, and we're helping France, as you know. We're helping France, Italy, Spain, Nigeria. We're giving, I think, 250 to Nigeria. We have many countries that we're helping, but the ventilator problem is solved, so you don't need that. We have now a different, it's sort of a combination of safety and reopening. So we'll have something in a different form. But the task force for what we've done, I think everybody out there, when they're being very honest, I think the job we've done on testing will shortly be, and maybe even supersede, Doug, the job that we've done on ventilators, which people can't even believe. We had a call the other day with the governors. Almighty. Mike Pence took the call, and they had, I believe, all 50 governors. And it was, they say, the best call we've had thus far. We're working closely with the governors. They have everything they need. And if they don't have it, and if they don't need it, or if they can't get it locally, and then they know that we are stocked and we are ready, and we can have. As an example, we won't need this, but we were ready for weeks to have. We had 10,000 ventilators sitting in various locations with people by the ventilators, ready to have those ventilators roll if they needed them in, as an example, Detroit or various other places over the country. So I think that as far as the task force, Mike Pence and the task force have done a great job, but we're now looking at a little bit of a different form, and that form is safety and opening, and we'll have a different group probably set up for that.
Are you
not home? And then he gets asked about the fact that it's going to come back. And,
doctors saying that there might be a recurrence of coronavirus in the fall. Why? Can you just explain why is now the time to wind down that task force?
Well, because we can't keep our country closed for the next 5 years. You know, you could say there might be a recurrence, and there might be. And, you know, most doctors or some doctors say that it will happen, and it'll be a flame, and we're going to put the flame out. We've learned a lot. You know, we've learned a lot about the coronavirus. We've learned a lot about this hidden enemy. It's a dangerous enemy. It's a bad enemy. You see what it does, especially for people over a certain age. And people that have an infirmity, if you have diabetes, if you have a bad heart, if you have a certain problem, it just, Myron, it just goes after you. It's vicious. That's right. And we're saying that people that are over 60, 65, but over 60, we're even saying, sort of stay back for a while. We recommend you staying back for a while.
Then why are you in Arizona?
At the same time with young children and children, we'd like to see the schools open early next season and on time.
You want to say it's amazing. It is not amazing. It's not even unpredictable. Irish Dave says, if I realized that my child was unwell, I would send him to a Chinese-owned military school like New York Military Academy, LOL. By the way, quit asking us what we would do with our troubled children, okay? Don't blame me. Blame S.E. Cup. Bob, quit telling us who not to blame. Hey, sorry about that. Bill in Allentown says that you didn't warn us that we needed the hockey puck. Jeremy says, am I crazy or do I remember correctly that many of the ventilators that the Trump administration shipped were broken and had to be fixed by the state before they could be used? Fuck me walking the lies. No, you don't misremember. That's what it was. Hey, thank you to Samson. Thank you very kindly, Samson, for getting us down to 199. That's huge. Thank you so very much. So Samson and Jeremy are helping get it done this evening. Thank you. Thank you so much. Irish Dave also adds, virulent, quit telling Bob what words not to use. Kind of gives us a whole other meaning to pizza with everything, don't it? Yeah.
Yeah, God bless America. Donald Trump's the greatest president we've ever had. I need one of your extra large pies with double Rona.
Lee in New York says, a call with all 50 governors. You think Pence told POTUS that the 50 governors were all were on mute? Then Pence handed them the Fisher-Price phone. He knew it was a perfect call because of the smiley face on the phone. Oh, my God. That's good. The image of Mike Pence handing him the Fisher-Price smiley face phone. Oh, yeah. So, you know, some of y'all
are going to have to die, and that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Yeah, Lord Fuckwad. What he said was,
it's time to open it up. Will some people be affected? Yes. Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country opened.
No, we don't. As noted before, this is an artificial shutdown. This is an induced economic coma. It is not like when the Republicans destroyed the economy in the 1920s. We can start it back up as quickly as we shut it down, but we do not need to start it back up, you know, until we're not dying so much. Ah, oh, well, you know, it's not regular people, though, I'm sure, right? Oh, very good, Billable Rick. Does Giannino's Pizza perchance have pepperona on its menu? Very good. That's the professional input that I've come to love and cherish from this community. So let's halfway through the program, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Something's going to have to happen here pretty soon. I'm going to have to start getting up later than I do, if that's even possible. I just can't wake up to this crap. I just can't. So let me get this straight. I didn't catch all of the, I didn't catch any of the first hour. Hell, I'll be honest about it. So I'm kind of flying blind. But what the hell? I could be president. So what did President, are you telling me, Bob, that President CNC said,
Sorry.
Well, that's what he is.
Yes.
I'm sure there are listeners within the sound of your voice and mine today, in this moment, who remember Mattel toys and remember that wonderful little toy, See and Say.
The cow says moo.
Jesus. And you spin the dial to whatever the pretty picture is, and you pull. That wasn't even battery. It was the string operated, wasn't it?
The president says, fake news, fake news. Yeah.
Yeah. President CNC. And now a word from President CNC. Can you say stupid? I knew you could. I'm mixing my metaphors there, but Jesus, Bob, I mean, here we are. Here we fucking are. So they're the hell, task force.
Hell of a place, going, ain't it?
Going bye-bye in the car, isn't it, Bob? Woo-wee. Boy, we're in big doings now, Bob.
Oh, there's a lot going on down here.
Come down on. Bring the kids. Balloons for everybody. Wait a minute.
33 and a third albums from the cutout bin.
Yes. Thank God. I'm getting weary. I was already weary, but I am getting weary, Bob. I want to put this burden down, as the old Negro spirituals used to sing. I feel like Mahalia Jackson, Bob. I wanna get my crown of glory in the world beyond. But I'm not going to. There ain't no crown. I'm already finding out that there's probably no emergency relief fund check. I haven't contacted anybody yet, but this is what a fool I am. I go to the website every day to where my banking is done, and really hope that there's this one little thing that I can actually believe and is provably so, you know? And as of last night when I checked, crickets. What did I see and hear, Bob? Crickets. So I don't know. I was kind of sanguine, I guess, early on. I didn't have any real deep expectation. And so far, they've proven me absolutely correct. So I don't know. Has anybody gotten this fucking check? Well, here's what I heard.
Yeah. I mean, people are getting it, but I think Social Security or disability recipients may be behind the curve.
Well, I do agree with something that you quoted Trump as saying. I think it was Trump that you were quoting. And this is weird. I find myself feeling strangely icky that I believe, you know, I actually buy into something that he said. Didn't he say just recently, if you have diabetes and you have a heart condition or some other malady, we're coming after you, or we're after you, or we're with you, or we did it, or what did he say? What was the quote?
No, he was just telling the reporter that people with diabetes and heart conditions are at greater risk. Of course, he couldn't say it that succinctly, but well.
Oh no, it'll get you. Well, that's what he's up to. They don't give a discernible shit about people who are in a bad way. They don't give a shit about their voters, the people who bought into their nonsense, you know, who were probably instructed to use their MAGA, their Chinese made MAGA, red MAGA hats as masks, as temporary make do masks until we can figure something out. We're the task forces. We're going to figure something out. What the fuck, Bob? What is going on? Has it come to this, really, at long last? I just don't know. I try to put on a happy face and be positive and upbeat, but man, it's getting hard to do that. And maybe that's why you don't do it. Maybe you were ahead of me by miles in not even trying to find, you know, keep one sunny side up or look on the brighter.
I refuse to engage in magical thinking. I refuse to engage in assumptions that cannot be supported with facts. And any notion that this man was ever going to be a decent human being or even a remotely not horrible president was magical thinking.
Oh, I never thought that either, Bob. I mean, this part is not at all surprising. I'm just amazed that it has taken this long for him to finally. I mean, he is the human. And I've said this before. Trump is the human embodiment. And I'll give him, we'll assume that he's human. I mean, he's at least in human form, sort of. Okay. But let's say that he is the human embodiment of that old adage. If you can't blind them with brilliance, baffle them
with
bullshit.
Well, yeah, just so you'll know, Jeremy in Vermont wanted you to know, I had the farm version of the see and say, and I'm not 40 until December. But then adds, as a type 1 diabetic, I'm really worried about COVID. I don't usually get sick, never had the flu, but when I do get sick, It's a down-and-out, dirty fight. And I think COVID would be such an outcome in my case. And remember, Jeremy's an essential employee out on the front damn lines.
Yeah. I mean, and he got away with his bullshit for a longer time than I expected. But he's finally come up against something that requires way more than what he brings to the conversation, if you can call it a conversation. Bullshit will not see you through this situation. You've got to believe, you've got to have a working understanding of a basic working understanding of science. You've got to dwell in the land of reality-based reality. You've got to have some kind of judgment and discernment in terms of the people that you put around you, because a president, I don't care who it is, one single man or one single woman can't do it all. It's a team effort, you know, but now and all along, we've looked at who's been on the team. More than a few, Bob, have called the man a fucking moron. And this was over a year ago, year and a half ago. Didn't the guy from the big oil company that had the big oil deal in Russia, who was the Secretary of State, I believe, didn't he call him a fucking moron? Wasn't there another cabinet level
fucking moron, fucking idiot? Yeah, one day you're the head of the most powerful oil company in the world, and the next day you're getting fired by a man who sells meat through the mail.
Yeah, so I mean, here we are. We're, you know, and he's finally up against it to the point where, except for his select few, who are zombie people, more and more people are really grasping on to the concept that he's a husk. He's a delusional, demented, inept fool. And that's who we're dealing with here.
He's also a drum. He's hollow and makes a noise only when thumped.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Ron in Raleigh wants you to know. He says, I'm on Social Security. I received my pittance on the first of this month. It ain't much, but it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Now, was that through direct deposit?
We'll have to wait to hear.
All right. Because, see, here's getting back to that. This is the part that I don't understand. Are they doing it alphabetically? What I heard was, if you receive Social Security in whatever form it is, whether it's retirement or disability or survivor, you need do nothing. I saw that in more than a few reputable places. So I, fool that I am, said, well, okay, I'll do nothing. This is what I've been instructed to do. Just be patient. And supposedly all of the electronic payments were to be handled, at least put into motion, by May 5th. Now look at your calendar, Bob, and tell me what it says. Pull the string on your See and Say calendar edition and tell me what
the
you see.
The cow says May 5th.
There you go. And I'm going to turn off the big fan because it's making too much noise. Now put on the little fan, Bob, because it's... So, and as of last night, when I checked, it had not shown up in my automatic banking thing. And I'm not complaining because I didn't really actually need it. But it would be nice to have just a little something extra drop in my lap. You know, it would cover a multitude of things that have been put off for a long, long time. But there you go.
It would feel a little like winning.
Yeah, you know. And here I hear him talking about, you know, one single payment of $1,200 is not going to be enough, you know, and they're working out a way, hopefully, to do another round of that. Well, hell, the first round hadn't gotten round to me, as near as I can figure, at least so far. But I'm not going to complain. Oh, and then last night, I was faced with a, I don't know what you would call it.
Wait, hold on.
Okay.
you've been sucked into it. This is from Jeremy in Vermont. Stop telling your big fans we make too much noise, Scott.
Okay, well, all right, jeez. Now you can't hardly move without getting a note from somebody around here. Ooh, well, if I have to, I'll turn off the little fan. And I'll just strip down to my...
No, don't. That's fine.
To my little...
You know, I hear your coffee cup tinkling, the spoon in the coffee cup.
Yeah,
I was going to mention something.
Okay.
I received something absolutely... Well, it came here. I just have to share because it's part of what makes this all so wonderful. I don't think there's anyone on planet Earth who loves coffee, and particularly espresso, more than does Chris in Germany. And so for Agnes's birthday not two weeks ago now, imagine the surprise to see a Nespresso espresso machine show up. Agnes has been having... I've been making sure that she gets espresso 2, 3, 4 times a day. And there's a little frother, an electric milk frother that comes with it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the Keurig, but the capsules are much smaller. And the neat thing as compared to like Keurig, they are entirely recyclable. The capsules are aluminum. They're recyclable. And they compost the grounds, and they even send you a postage-paid bag where you can send your used capsules back for recycling.
Oh, wow.
And it is some delicious stuff. There's even good decaf. And so all that lovely, frothy, foamed milk, and wow. And so big thanks to Chris in Germany for that, because it's made Agnes's coffee time a lot more special.
Well, see, I'm still way behind you. How many months did the listeners and the Horn family have to put up with my moaning and complaining about instant coffee? And then one day out of the blue, a knock comes to the door, and it's a guy from the delivery service with a carton. And I open the brown paper covered carton. And there's a 4-cup coffee maker in there from one of the Horn listeners who either took pity on my poor taste buds or said, oh, for the love of mind, Mike, will you please shut up about the instant coffee? And, man, I've been giving that – well, I told you this. I've been giving that thing a workout and trying different blends and different
And occasionally forgetting to put the pot back under the spout, yes.
I did that once, Bob. So espresso, that's way down the line for me. Well, then again, another knock may come to the door. I'm not hinting. I'm very happy right now with my 4-cup coffee maker.
Well, I was just going to suggest that it might be, because you are a true lover of Java. It might be, when this thing does roll through for you, it might be something worth thinking about, because you can get a nice used one on Amazon for cheap-ish as compared to a brand new one.
Now, espresso is like a it's not thicker, it's just stronger, or
it's a dark,
more robust,
it's a darker roast. It's actually got less caffeine than like a medium roast bean, because the roasting destroys some of the caffeine, I guess. By the way, brother Deacon Asa says that is the standard against which coffee is measured. Nestle may be an evil corporation, but they do make the best coffee.
Well, and they used to make not bad chocolate, N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Nestle's makes the very best chocolate. Remember, they used to make candy bars, which I always thought were way better than Hershey bars. They may still make them. I haven't seen one in years. They also used to make Nestle's Quick, you know, that cocoa powder.
Oh, it's still
stuff
out there.
They still make that? And I like the Strawberry Quick myself. But that was just me. I'm very strange that way. I have no idea. I've gone off track here, Bob. I'm sure I had something on my mind when I called. This is the risk I take when I haven't ingested enough coffee when I call. Oh, I know what. So last night, like a hot kiss at the end of a wet kiss at the end of a hot fist, I turned on PBS last night, and I see part one of a two-part, four-hour American Experience segment called George W. Bush. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I really want to go down that path and watch that. Aren't I having enough fun with, you know, with the
At some point in time, it becomes self-abuse, Scott, and not in a good way.
Well, don't get ahead of me.
You know, not in the way that the nuns invade against.
Right, right. So I recorded it on the handy-dandy DVR. Only to find out that it was a two-hour show, and for some reason, the DVR said it was only a one-hour show. So I found the rest of it online last night, and I watched the first 2 hours. And I'm not going to start singing the praises of W. I'm not even going to say compared to Trump, he was a much better human and better president.
I don't think you can say that.
Oh, I never will. I haven't even seen tonight's 2 hours, but I know as sure as I'm sitting here that what I see tonight is not going to magically pull me over into the end zone, into that territory where I can stand up and say with a loud, steady voice, I love you, George W. Bush. You're great. We miss you. Because that ain't going to happen. And it surely will not. Stop calling me Shirley. Now I'm doing my own bits. It surely will not happen with Trump. What would need happen to move him into the pantheon of greatness? I don't think there's a combination of circumstances that will ever do that. He is always going to be a tangerine-tinted tub of toe cheese, Bob. President Clueless, at your service. You know? God help us. But anyway, I am going to watch it because apparently some people over at PBS put some work into it. But man, it took me back. And only 20 years. Really? See, that's the weird thing. It's only been 20 years, not quite, since the election of 2000. You remember that night, Bob? Jesus.
Yeah,
Florida, Florida, Florida. It says Libby, Libby, Libby on the label, label, label. It says, I just don't know. So I recommend it. I mean, if nothing else, it'll give you something to watch other than, you know, this constant drumbeat of doom and doom and gloom. And
well, I mean, and I'm sorry about that, but it's hard to. You know what I mean? It's just I'm trying to find a little giggle here and there with these stupid toxic fools and doing silly voices and things like that. But Jesus,
I'm not saying this show. I mean that we depend on this daily exercise in reality. You know, to stay on top of stuff. I'm talking about TV. And it's not going to get any better because they're not in production. If we ever get to a point where they launch a new season, what will there be? I saw something on CBS that I haven't seen in 20 years. A CBS Sunday night movie, Bob. I forget what it was. I think it was one of the...
God almighty. Behold the Coelacanth. I said, yeah, Behold the Coelacanth.
Yeah. It was one of the Indiana Jones films. But I remember when NBC has Saturday night at the movies and Monday night at the movies.
Oh, NBC Mystery Theater. I mean, that's where you got McMillan and Wife and Columbo and McLeod.
I used to love McLeod. Dennis Weaver. Was that who it was?
Yeah.
He was a big environmentalist.
Yep.
There ain't no programs in the pipeline. So you've got to find something to watch. And, you know, I don't care how informed you want to stay. You can only take so much of the current situation where it comes to the point where you got to say, I got to turn this shit off. This stuff is making me crazy. And it doesn't mean that I don't want to.
Well, that works out well for me. I mean, because I watch so little that, you know, I get a couple of good recommendations and I'm good for a while. So I'm plowing and plodding through Bosch. And now I've got a season of The Upload, which is, like I said, proving to be pretty funny in a cringy kind of way. One guy explains to the newly dead protagonist who's living in the upload environment now. The first people here had no eyelids. They didn't eat, didn't pee, and didn't have eyelids. They went psychotic in a week.
Now, in that world, what were the primary sponsors on the evening network news? Because that's all it is. Remedies if you can't sleep. Remedies if you pee too much or can't pee enough. Do you ever look at the nightly news and find out who it's brought to you by? I remember when Texaco used to sponsor it. Back in the old Huntley Brinkley days. But I'm living in the past. Fuck me, man.
And by the way, you got a little compliment coming in here. Dennis from Columbus says, you and Scott from San Diego are firing on all cylinders. I'm really enjoying the conversation. Uh-oh. Well, thank you,
What's
Dennis.
In this coffee?
That's just nice. That's just nice. And by the way, Jeremy lets us know that Star Trek Discovery 3, the Star Trek Discovery's third season is in the can, but the release date hasn't been issued.
So, yeah, because they were, a lot of shows were just, I guess, just cranking up for the fall season. Isn't that how it works? They start in the spring, late winter, early spring, for whatever's supposed to be on the schedule in the fall.
Right.
I think that's how they do it. But somebody, who is it? The radio guy that I used to listen to on the local Air America affiliate here in San Diego, Stacy Taylor, was saying that Netflix, I think he said it was Netflix, has a new seven-part series, limited series called Hollywood, I think is the name of it. Have you heard of this one?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix. You know, the one that I can't quite get my head around that just wound up this past Sunday, I guess, it was on AMC, and it was, to my mind, it was a magical cross between a scavenger hunt and Strange Happenings and just Wizard of Oz, even, people working together on a task and taking a journey. The show was called Dispatches from Elsewhere. And I'm going to have to watch that whole 10 parts or whatever it was again, because the last episode left me not thinking I'd wasted my time, because I obviously didn't. I thought it was a well-done show, but it didn't go where I thought it was going. So I'm going to have to fire up the old AMC app and revisit all 10 episodes or whatever. I don't think it'll be back because I think it was one of those standalone limited series type series. Hey, wait a minute, Bob. There's something wrong with my TV. It says total fertilities. total fatalities in the U.S., over 70,000. That ain't what the president said the other day, Bob.
We've tested more than anybody else in the world.
Let me roll this back here and find out why I'm seeing what I'm seeing. Now, the president hasn't lied to us, has he, Bob?
Yes.
He hasn't. In a series of terminological inexactitudes. Now, has he, Bob? Has he?
He has.
1,203,922 confirmed cases, total fatalities, 70,891. And the grand odometer of death continues to spin.
Rolling.
Ratcheting its way up to oblivion. 1,203,922 and 70,891 of those poor bastards are no longer upright and above ground. That's a sobering thought. See, I was thinking about this the other day. Growing up as a youngster in the early 60s, my maternal grandmother, Laura Cady, used to talk about surviving the 1918 flu. So, you know, if you go from 1918 to, say, 1960, 61, 62, sitting at your grandmother's feet, hearing the stories of the olden days, I checked it out the other day. I believe she was about 24 or 26 years old when the flu, the 1918 flu hit. So all those years later, it must have made a profound impact on her as a young woman back then to relate those stories to me and my siblings and my various cousins. Pay attention now, folks, especially you younger people. Make lots of notes. Remind yourself now of how you're feeling and what you're going through. Because if you somehow manage to live through this, and there are future generations or young people around you, younger people around you, that you will interact with and influence in some positive way. The oral history is a big thing. I watched a 3-hour in-depth session from C-SPAN Book TV from, I think, 2002 with Studs Terkel. And you talk about oral histories and delving in to, you know, how life impacted people when they were up against it years ago.
Yeah.
Studs Terkel can tell you some stories because he went out there and looked for them. I commend that to anybody who's looking for something of quality to look at for a few hours to get your mind off our current situation. In depth with Studs Terkel and the young fellow who interviewed him for the 3 hours on Book TV was whichever correspondent Steve is. He used to be on Washington Journal from time to time, and may still be. Maybe Todd or Steve in Georgistan know. Dark-haired young fella, seemed to always have a pleasant demeanor. Steve somebody. But, yeah. You're right, Bob. I am all over the place today.
Oh, no, I mean, you're doing fine. But yeah.
Well, I always like to.
And Ron wanted you to know it. He wrote back after you asked your question. The pittance was in fact a direct mail deposit. I'm not sure if that means it was direct deposit or that it was mailed directly to. Ron, a little more clarification, please.
Yeah. Because a few years ago, maybe when I was before I was officially, quote, retired on Social Security, I was receiving Social Security disability. And about 8 or 10 years ago, they stopped sending checks and sent a little debit card thing, which they would load up on the third of each month.
And by the way, Shorty in L.A. Sent something along a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. You might, I think you, if I understood correctly, you've got to go and do something online by today.
I think that has to do with if you have kids under 18 or 17 to get the additional $500 per.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is what this is.
You know, as far as I know, I don't have any kids under 18. No, I'm pretty sure I don't. I'm confident I don't, Bob. By God, do I? No, I that would be humanly impossible. We would have to have moved into the area of the divine for it to be so, Bob. So I guess I can rest assured, as it were. But getting back to my maternal grandmother, pay attention now, especially you younger folks, because this is, if we manage to survive this pandemic, which is not a sure thing, just because we have survived things in the past doesn't mean that we're going to survive things and thrive in the future. We're up to here. Think of it as the "you are here" marker at the malls, if you remember malls, shopping malls. You walk into the complex, you know the store you want to go to, but you don't know where it is in relation to where you are. You walk boldly up to the lighted map and look at it, and sooner or later, your twinkling eyes will fall upon that magic phrase, "you are here." Well, how does it know where I am, Bob? Is this that big brother that I'd heard so much about? He's watching us.
Big derp, you know? Brother. I mean,
I just don't know. But so check out that Hollywood. I believe Stacy when he says that it's quite good. And I liked L.A. Confidential. It's of that era. And some people say the movie was not nearly as good as the... Was it Elmore Leonard? Is that who wrote the book?
L.A. Confidence? Seems right, yeah.
Yeah.
I loved the movie.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those ones where I have seen it probably 2 dozen times over the years. I just love the story. I love the acting in it. I love that era. If we could go back in time, I would love to go.
It's one of the things I enjoy about Bosch is that even though it's modern day, it's got a great jazz soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, you know, just really L.A. vibe, horn jazz. And yeah. it accompanies it perfectly.
Well, you know what's wild is...
Okay, Shorty says, "Do nothing, Scott. Mid-May, possible arrival of your money."
Okay, well, hell, I excel at doing nothing, so this ought to be a breeze. Well, thank you, Shorty. I appreciate that, because I know I try to come across as cool and collected and calm and just all together and stuff. But it's a ruse. It's a ruse, people. I'm telling you, inside I'm crumbling every minute of the day. But the L.A. Confidential movie, some of the pivotal action takes place in a bar called the Frolic Bar, which apparently is a real place. After watching L.A. Confidential so many times, I began to see it in other TV dramas, not only based in that era, but later, and maybe even before. I love it when those shows go to actual locations or recreate the locations so effectively. It's just, there's a realism. It's like another film I like, Chinatown. Oh. It's a slightly earlier era.
Yeah, I struggle with Chinatown because it's Roman Polanski. And he's such a dirtbag. But God, that movie. Know, God, that movie.
Well, you know, it was supposed to be a trilogy. It was Chinatown, and then it was The Two Jakes. Well, the first one had to do with water. The second one had to do with oil. And the third one had to do, I think, with, like, the automobile or the highway system or something. It was like an L.A. trilogy. Somebody can look it up. But, yeah, I get what you mean about Polanski. But if you start not separating the artist from the person, then what do you cut out of your life? I mean, and I've struggled with this too. But where would that put me with Woody Allen films? Jesus, I love Woody Allen films.
Yeah, well, there's another one.
You know, I heard that Woody Allen and Roman Polanski were going to team up at long last and do a film called Close Encounters with the Third Grade, Bob, is
oh,
what I heard.
Oh, but, oh,
oh, oh. Oh, God. Slap me. When somebody come knock on my door, I'll come and open it, wave to you, and you just hit me. Just slap me as hard as you want. And I was going somewhere with this, and I don't know where I was going. But I do like that last album that George Harrison did, the title. I think it was called Any Road. If you don't know where you're going, Any Road will take you there. That kind of works for me. So there.
Oh, and Bill in Allentown says, Hollywood is on Netflix. He says, I got a few emails from them advertising it to everyone who has Netflix. And the C-SPAN guy he's trying to remember is Steve Scully. He was on yesterday morning.
Yeah, I got to start watching Washington Journal more. Just to get crazy. I love listening to him.
Lady B with a message for you. Tell Scott, do it anyway. I did for my sister 2 weeks ago, and she's on disability. She got her direct deposit Friday. My neighbor is also on disability, but she thought she submitted her last tax return in 2018. She didn't get any money, so we filled it out Sunday night. Just do it. List zero as your income, and make sure you have direct deposit info handy. I know what Shorty says, but like I said, as soon as I heard about it, I did it for my sis. I got my money April 15th or so, and again, my sis is on disability and just got her check on Friday. The thing is, though, you're not, I mean, you're on regular Social Security now. You're not disabled anymore.
Because right.
As of age 65, you stopped being disabled. Miraculously.
Oh, did you feel the thrill go through me when that happened, Bob? That magical moment at 2:10 in the morning of my birthday, turning 65? I was no longer disabled. What's happened here?
You threw down your crutches, jumped up out of your wheelchair, and danced a little buck and wing, as though you'd been healed at a tent meeting, a tent revival.
I thought I was in an Oral Roberts meeting, Bob.
And Irish Dave says my significant other, a Social Security recipient, got a $1,200 direct deposit about a week ago. I expert guessed as a VA pensioner, I'm not going to get economically stimulated and shit.
Mm. Well, you know, when you, especially dealing with Trump and company, you begin to, your mind, especially if you have a vivid imagination as I tend to, I'm thinking, well, did my name appear on a list somewhere? Are they monitoring my Facebook feed? I mean, because if the timing of the receipt of the proceeds is in any way connected to how you feel about Trump, I'll never get a goddamn check. I may have to pay them before it's over, you know? So, but I think I told you about this before. But by and large, my Social Security meets my month-to-month requirements. There ain't a lot left over at the end of the month, but it's been a while since I've missed a meal. It's been a while when I've had to sleep out in the park. Okay. It's been a while that I couldn't be a little charitable, if I came across somebody who really needed my help or whatever. So, but what I was looking at was It's always nice, just every so often, to have a little extra drop into your lap out, seemingly out of nowhere. And I it wasn't like I was necessarily counting on it. I had sort of an honest assessment. I said, well, it either will happen or it won't. And if it does, that'll be nice. And if it doesn't, well, I wasn't expecting it before anyway. So, you know, it's a win-win-win sort of deal. But I will go to that website.
You mentioned, so what you're saying is it's been a while since you've been on the Republican three meals a day plan. oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal.
Yeah. And that's in a magical land, boys and girls, where ketchup is a vegetable. Yeah, but it's not as big a vegetable as Reagan was. Put him in a Heinz jar and see what happens.
Jesus.
But here we are. I mean,
well, I got one question for you before we wrap up.
All right.
How far are you from Santee, San Diego County?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. When I first
was that you clowning around at the Vons?
No, Bob. I would have put on an old pair of smiley face boxers and cut out a couple of the smiley faces for eye holes and walked in there. That crazy bastard. When I first moved out here, I used to live in Santee. It's in the eastern part of San Diego County, and they're not known for their subtlety, Bob. Some of them ain't all that bright. You know, it's one of the more right-wing areas. If you want to see Trump signs in San Diego County, drive yourself up to Santee.
Or as they call it, Santucky.
Santucky.
Or Clantee. I learned that yesterday.
Clantee. And hot in the summertime, you know, the further inland you go, the hotter it is. If you're within 8 miles of the beach, you get those breezes off of the coast more often than not. But you get inland 16 miles or whatever it is where Santee is, and the terrain gets a little crazy, and you're down in one of those little valleys or surrounded by the mountains, and you will sweat, Bob. You will, even the women sweat like horses in Santee. They don't glow. They gave up glowing, Bob. Them girls sweat, you know. But, yes, I know Santee well. I used to shop at that fucking Vaughn's. Actually, it's not the same building. It's across the street from the one I used to shop at, the old dilapidated Vaughn's. And then a couple of years after I moved out to Santee, they made it an anchor store in a brand-new development across the street. But yes, I know Santee well. I was the 2000 election. I was renting a room in the home of a young Republican lawyer who had a neighbor in construction across the street, and they would come and drink every night and smoke, and we would have these conversations. This was all during the Bush v. Gore controversy that ran for, what, 36 days or whatever it was. And they would try to convince me how wrong I was, and I would try to convince them how wrong they were. And history eventually told the tale of who was wrong and who wasn't with that brouhaha. But, yes, maybe the people don't know what happened in Santee.
No, I did the story last night.
Okay, well, see, I was not... I had several things that needed doing yesterday.
Yeah,
and I missed
big old feller in cargo shorts and a camo T-shirt and a Klan hood.
Yeah, in a fucking grocery store. Now, they don't know. They still don't know who the guy is. And last I heard, they had not tried to go after him in terms of media or law enforcement. I'm wondering, was it a joke? was he just being shitty about it and said, well, they want me to wear a mask when I go to the grocery store. I'll wear a mask. I'll show them. Or is it possible that the headgear was reflective of his feelings? Is there any new information about that?
I haven't seen. No, I checked this morning and there was no further development.
Because you know that if the guy is one of them, that Onan News or Fox or one of them is going to find him. Because if he's let's figure it out, Bob. If he's bold and crazy enough to go shopping in a big, and it's a big supermarket in a major metropolitan area, wearing a Klan hood, well, you know he's not going to be afraid to go on the media. Unless he has to do it in shadow, or worse yet, if he has to show up wearing the fucking hood for all of his media appearances, or limit it to radio or something. But these people do tend to get out ahead of themselves, and they won't leave well enough alone. I have a friend who thinks it was just a prank, a joke. You know, give us something to talk about, change the subject, you know. But I don't know.
Well, the fact that he had to be told twice kind of takes the prank part out of it.
Okay, well, there's that. And knowing what I know from my 8 or 10 months living in Santee, it doesn't surprise me, although I was a bit taken aback. Because I love California. And as wonderful as it is, there are still those people who, you know, there's always somebody who's got to show you what a jerk he or she.
Oh, by the way, thanks to Ralphs, we now know what the third Chinatown film was.
Yeah, what was it?
From a November 6, 2007 MTV interview with Jack Nicholson, the third one was going to be Giddies versus Giddies. It was meant to be set in 1968 when no-fault divorce went into effect in California. It was to be about Giddies' divorce. And it was going to relate to divorce, and it was going to be about divorce and relate to air, just as Chinatown was about water, and The Two Jakes was about fire and energy.
Hmm. You know, somebody ought to make it. I know Jack Nicholson's getting a little long in the tooth to play Giddies, but I know a lot of people didn't like The Two Jakes. I didn't think it was anywhere near as good as Chinatown was, but I got what they were getting at.
And by the way, confirming what you were saying earlier, Glenn writes in and says, I'm an old San Diego native, and Santee has always been hee-haw central. It became a hub for Dust Bowl migrants in the 30s, and even with some gentrification over the years, the general attitude has changed little. Jeremy, meanwhile, says, subject line, the Klan dude. Bob, please, you're from the Appalachian Mountains as well. You know damn well that weren't camouflage. It was mossy oak. Thank you very much. Yes, it was. It was mossy oak breakup, damn it. Yeah, we know.
Well, we have a bunch of car dealerships out here by the name of Mossy. I wonder.
Yeah, mossy oak is a pattern. Yeah. And Irish Dave reminds us the original anti-masking laws were aimed at the Klan, but later in New York, the target was tenants rebelling against the slumlords, and it was also used against labor organizers along the way as well. Just, you know, one of those little facts.
Well, once again, I mean, the community comes through in terms of filling in blanks. And you folks do it very well, I'm telling you.
Oh, the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department is not to be beaten.
No, not hell. But anyway, I don't know what this rambling conversation has done or proved or provided that wasn't present before.
I don't think that was the purpose, but, you know, whatevs. But, you know, enjoy your coffee. I've got another call rolling in here, so we'll see how that all goes.
All right, Bob, take care, and my best to you and Agnes. Belated greetings to Agnes and you, and Well, I hate long goodbyes, so I'll just say bye.
She went off to make breakfast for dinner for the grandbabies this evening. So,
nothing better than
they're having pancakes with Kerrygold butter and Mrs. Butterworth syrup. I offered to buy real maple, but the kids like Mrs. Butterworth's, and I understand. So you get them what they want.
And, well, I remember it first came out, it was pretty good stuff.
And Kaneka. Because
how about grits?
Because
are they having grits?
No, they're not having grits. Because Kaneka dredged through maple syrup is heavenly.
Oh, yeah.
Heavenly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you got me salivating, Bob.
Yeah, I'm a little.
I better.
I'm a mite peckish myself.
I better go before I short out the phone.
All right, later, Scott. You take care.
All right, see you, man.
Bye. That's our buddy Scott. And let's see here. And I was chatting earlier with our buddy Parson Brown. He's out L.A. way. And we were going to have a conversation this afternoon. Parson, no need for the video. That eats up bandwidth. So you can kill your camera. Just one second here. And before I go to Parson, just real quick, because she has to work quick because she's on break.
Oh yes. Yeah,
it's Lady B.
Okay. Oh, hi. I'm sorry. Let me try to talk directly into the phone. I heard the playback and I sounded like crap on my head. Anyway, real quick, I wanted to tell you guys a few things, and I've been vacillating between anger and acceptance all day. Last night I was at my water plant, a small plant, you know, it's one of the first, it was built in 1941, so it's a small plant. And one of the guys that I was working with, I've known him for a while. He was generous. He gave me money in a time of need. And so I really appreciate him. But it is, you know, he's a typical white guy in the sense that there's a lot of stuff that he doesn't understand. And I used to be of the opinion that, okay, let me go ahead and inform you. It's my job to tell you. But, Bob, years ago, I said, you know what? It's not my job to educate you. I don't have to tell you about every odd and end, why black people do this, all that and the other. If you're interested, you'll find out. But long story short, he came up to me and he says, you got to tell me something. Is there some genetic reason why black people are getting sick from COVID more than white? And
the answer is no.
I mean, I told him. No, go ahead, Bob.
No, you please.
Well, it was, I've known him, and he knows me, because I keep it real. You know, I'm a sassy black woman, right? And I was like, honey, it has nothing to do with being black. It has everything to do. This is strictly socioeconomic. And then I explained to him that black people, there's a lot of black people who live in apartments. They have communal hallways. There's black people who live in multiple people to a home. And there's no control over what every person does. The advantage of being an essential personnel, even at a shit level, is the fact that you're still working. And I told him that too. I'm like, you got a great job here with the city. Utilities. I mean, you're doing good. You're taking care of yourself. You're taking care of your wife. Your kids are, you know, almost grown, but you're doing the best you can. And I said, and I'm lucky too, because I'm still working just like you are, except my job is considered a shit job and your job is considered a good job. Both of us are in the same amount of danger. He has high blood pressure and other problems too. And I said, the difference between me and you is that I'm going to go I'm ordering my stuff now to come to my house. And I live in a house. Oh, I'm blessed. I've got a driveway, dude. It's a dirt driveway, but I have
You're not sharing halls with anybody.
I have my own car, and I can ride in and out of that car by myself. And but it shocked me. It shouldn't surprise me, but it shocked me that he would say that. But he's a sweetheart. He's naive as fuck. He doesn't know. I think the fact that he even knows what he knows about black people now is because we've known each other for 3 years. So I guess when you guys were talking about the dude with the Klan hood, to me, it was like another incident happened. I went into Safeway. I womaned up, and I got the courage to go into Safeway. I've been needing to get hamburger buns, and I just kept putting it off and putting it off. Finally, I put on my mask and gloves, and I went into Safeway. All of the cashiers are wearing masks and gloves. And for the most part, most of the customers were wearing masks and gloves because it's Safeway. Let me tell you something about being poor. You got Safeway, which is Kroger's. You got King Supers is Kroger's. You have Safeway, and then you got Walmart. Normally, I would be at Walmart. But I figure my life is too precious right now. So I will spend the extra money to go to Safeway because they're a little bit cleaner. There's a guy standing near the checkout lane, the self-checkout. He's got on a T-shirt that says, quarantine this. He doesn't have on a mask and glove. And I'm not going to regale you guys with all these stories about all these people doing right and wrong and Klan masks. I'm not going to do that because as a black woman, I'll tell you this. It's shocking, but again, it's not surprising.
Precisely.
That guy had no right. He was so offensive. He was so, just because of how he was treating everybody around him. And I'm thinking, you should be shaking these people. No, don't touch their hand. But you should be thanking all of these people who give a damn. Excuse me, my allergies. These people give enough. They care enough about their customers that they're doing everything they can to keep their customers safe so that you can come in here with your shirt and pretend like just, I'll say this. People are scared, Bob. We are scared. Everybody's scared.
Yeah.
And those marchers are terrified. And that guy with the Klan hood is an asshole, but he's terrified. And I try to understand that, and I'm trying to embrace that.
But
in the meantime,
how about the people that show up with the anti-Semitic posters at the Ohio Director of Health's home?
But that's what they're going to do. That's what. Here we go. That's what white people do. Not all white people.
Natch.
But yeah. Okay. So that's my world as an African American. So I'm going to take my cart and I'm going to push it as far away from those people. I'm not going to confront that. I'll leave that up to you, white liberals, because y'all have a better chance of walking away not arrested than I do. And I appreciate it. But I kept my basket away from that man. I didn't confront him. I didn't yell at him. I didn't do anything.
I'm just lost in the mindset in all of this, in everything that's going on. What plum evades me is the idea that, well, okay, you've got some time on your hands, so what are you going to do with it? You're gonna get you a T-shirt that says that.
He wants to hurt your feelings because his feelings are hurt. It's just like a child, except unfortunately it's not as benign. Unfortunately, this dude probably owns guns, this guy fucking boats, and he is in a grocery store. You know, the Klan guy and the other guy. I mean, that's how white, Bob, isn't it terrible to say that? Just like what my friend told me last night, assuming that all black people somehow were genetically predispositioned to this. It's horrible to sit here and say that's just how white people are. Because I don't think I'm racist, not openly. I grew up around white people. I've been around them all my life. I have white people in my family. But baby, that's what they do. That's what some folks do because they feel empowered and they are emboldened. And this is their moment. And they may not have another moment just like this again. So they're going to live this one up, and they're going to cuss, and they're going to complain, and they're going to fight, and they're going to throw a tantrum. And only then, after they get all of this, and this shit picks back up, and probably knowing these lucky motherfuckers, they, you know, they may never get touched. But when this shit kicks up again and we start having to be obedient like those Chinese and Japanese people do, that's the only thing we're waiting for. We're going to have to make Americans do this because of silly shit like that. And that's what's going to happen, Bob. I got to go, baby. But, honey, it ain't no surprise.
It is.
And I'm not offended by it. I'm not offended by it, Bob. I'm not offended by it because that's just how it is.
Just tells me who they are. It's like when they drive around with their Confederate flags flying off their trucks. I mean, you're telling me who you are.
And those are people that I don't care what their excuse is. I don't, you know, I know a guy at the water plant. He has a "don't tread on me" on his phone, and he talks to me, and we laugh, and he tells me how much he enjoys me because I'm one of the good Negroes.
Yes,
but you know. And everybody's like, "Well, why do you sit there? You look like you're bowing and scraping and shucking and jiving." No, I don't do that. I don't do that. I'll joke with y'all, but I don't do that. I know better. I love myself too much. But yeah, if you come towards me with no mask or a Klan hood, I'm gonna walk. I'm gonna run away, because I don't have a choice. I don't. I'm not scared, Bob. I just want to live. I just want to live. So whatever. Ooh, baby, I gotta let you go.
All right.
I love you guys.
Later on.
Continue on. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
All right. Bye. The one and only Lady B. I'm not scared. I just want to live. And now let's bounce over to the other line and check in with my dear friend of long standing, Parson Brown. Hey, Parson.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I do. You sound crystal clear.
Oh, great. I was listening to everybody else that you were talking to and hoping that I wasn't accidentally
no, you're
speaking
great.
Over top of them.
No, you're great.
In this new condition where every body of work has become Zoom meetings or Skype meetings or, you know, telecommunication. In the last few weeks, I've had some good experiences and some learning experiences. So, Bob Kincaid, it is so good to be on your show again. It's so, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. The pleasure is all mine, Parson.
And I hope that you are well and healthy, and you and yours are doing well. It sounds like you are, and I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, you've worked around here. You know what West Virginia's like.
Oh yeah, well,
I don't have any of the issues. Well, I don't have many of the issues that people in more populous areas have.
It's a situation where the Appalachians have the upper hand, which is very rare.
Well, for once, I mean, we're actually more endangered, Parson, because we're so essentially screwed up from jump. But
that's true. Actually, your friend Lady B, and actually your friend, I believe, what was your friend's name? Ron, who was just on earlier. I was listening to both of them.
That was Scott.
Scott. Oh, excuse me. So sorry. But I was listening to both of them, and but just a few minutes ago, Miss Lady B made so many good points about, you know, like my history working with environmental injustice across the nation, and not just in Appalachia, but we are finding that places that are disserviced, where poverty is the regular, is the norm, that is impacting people far more. And it just magnifies the problems that we've already had set in place, you know, the problems that we've already had laid down as the foundation of this country. And it just brings it to the front line. You know, we're just witnessing it.
Yeah. And I mean, just to point out, and just to give you an idea of how screwed up, just a reminder, like I said, you've worked here, you know,
But I got a story here from the Charleston Gazette, and I saw it earlier today, and it made me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. The Centers for Disease Control informed the leadership of the state of West Virginia, top government officials, that they had purchased, these West Virginia officials, counterfeit respirators.
Can we pause right there? Let's not even go any further.
Oh, no, because they're...
Even the dogs got upset by that. Yeah, what is a counterfeit respirator?
It's like an N95 mask that doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
4.6.
They bought 50,000 of them, Parson. Then they were told that they were counterfeit, and the state of West Virginia gave the counterfeit respirators to first responders any old damn way.
Do they function?
No. Let's see. Jeff Sandy, who's the Secretary of the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety, said, "These masks are genuine products from Shanghai Dasheng Health Products Manufacturer Company Limited and not counterfeit." He said, "Oh, they're being misrepresented as approved by the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, but they're not."
See, the wordage there is what really gets me is, so what does counterfeit mean? Has somebody done something scandalous?
They probably just got clipped, because the real thing, as made by that company, have headbands and not ear loops. These things have ear loops, which led CDC officials to think that they probably do not work as they are supposed to.
Okay, so definitely cutting corners in some way. I am not an expert on this, but that, and it's, this is the first that's been brought to my attention, but that just, that sounds ridiculous.
We paid $567,000, the state of West Virginia did, for 100,000 masks, respirators.
And fortunately, West Virginia is experiencing a lower rate, at least as of the last figures that I saw, of cases.
But it's only, but Parson, it's only a lower rate because we're not testing worth a shit.
Oh, absolutely. I am not making light of that at all.
You know, 50,000 tested out of a population of somewhere between 1.5 and 1.7 million people.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong by any means. You know, my heart is in Appalachia, and I had opportunities to, I'm in Los Angeles right now, and I had opportunities to go back to, Virginia or West Virginia. I had invitations to Kentucky, places where I was offered to wait this out, but I chose to stay here in Los Angeles because, for as long as I want to broadcast content and try to stay relevant, but I would feel more comfortable on my mountain. And you know, things are different everywhere that you are. Every community is handling it differently. And that's what I'm seeing, in the news. And that's what I think that people are missing, I guess. The thing that people aren't understanding is, like, New York City and Los Angeles are not the same as Beckley, West Virginia.
Not by a long shot.
Yeah, and so we have different circumstances, and you know, every local government has to assess that in their own way. But we got to be responsible, and just because you haven't seen it or heard it, if you haven't felt it in your community, does not mean that the virus doesn't exist. Trust me, it exists. I've been talking with people from all over the country the last few weeks because, you know, I'm a broadcaster nerd and have been sequestered. So I've been speaking with folks in frontline situations in as many states and cities as I can, and I can tell you that it's different everywhere. It is not the same case in Denver as it is in New York. It is not the same case in New York as it is in Los Angeles, and the people in Chicago are having to handle it differently as well as Appalachia and everywhere. It's a very complicated situation, and that's, you know, we get these briefings and we get these updates. Some are better than others. Thank you, Governor Cuomo. But there's so much information that how can you blame people for not being able to process it?
To me, Parson, there's a difference between having a hard time processing it. Hell, I'm doing that. And willfully choosing to ignore reality.
Hiding it. Yeah. I'll go ahead and say it. I have a racist Republican uncle who fights any piece of relevant news that I post ever. I don't go to his house at Christmas anymore.
Oh, no. No. And
we're over it.
But it's when it's people you're close to, that is physically painful. It is not only emotionally painful, but physically painful.
It is. Well, and like, just, you know, I'm playing a little bit. I mean, I do have a racist Republican uncle, but, you know, people that I've known my entire life, I think lots of people could relate to this, that, you know, I love, like, my uncle was the coolest guy ever. And it wasn't until Trump got elected that I realized that, like, some people around me really, like, you sign on to this, like, you subscribe to this nonsense. And, you know, like, I come from a family where my father is a staunch Republican and my mother is a liberal Democrat. I was born and raised just below the Mason-Dixon line. My kitchen table conversations growing up were controversial at times, lots of times. And I feel like I'm a better person for that. But there's so much divisiveness. And
well, it's what I've been saying all along, Parson. We are exposed. I don't mean to the virus. I mean this crisis has exposed things about our national character,
our true colors.
We really didn't want to be. I mean, I got just a for instance here. You'll be able to hear this. Ralphs just sent this to me. This is a tweet from earlier today when he went to the Honeywell factory in Arizona. You know, you're a filmmaker. I'm an old DJ. We both understand that things like soundtrack music or bumper music adds to the overall impact of the moment. Agreed?
Of course. Yeah.
So I just want to play you this audio.
Okay.
They were blaring a song in the factory while Clorox Claudius was touring it.
By Clorox Claudius,
we mean Trump.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to be clear.
Yeah, Clorox Claudius, Nitwit Nero.
Yes,
COVID,
yes. All,
COVID
all
Caligula.
All the terms I understand now.
Yes. So this is the soundtrack for his visit to the mask factory.
Okay.
This is the material that traps the particulates.
You recognize it?
That sounds sort of like, I don't know if circusy is a word, but it sounds very circusy.
It was Paul McCartney and Wings, Live okay. and Let Die.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that did happen. But where was it at?
It was in the Honeywell factory where he was visiting in Arizona today. And while he was there, they blasted it all around the factory.
God, what a distasteful song to play.
I don't know if somebody
I'm
was
getting your, I'm just I'm getting your point.
I'm trying to figure out if somebody I'm trying to figure out if somebody was punking him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
this is the same gang that plays the Stones. You can't always get what you want at every one of his Clavern rallies.
Dude, I work in an industry where my job is specifically to make sure that things like that don't happen, or to make sure that they do happen. It is somebody's job, and that is absolutely distasteful. It's just not, that turns my gut.
Yeah, it's awful.
You know, oh my gosh, as somebody who, when you want to produce a situation, especially a live event, and during such a trying time, in such a circumstance where we really need to be, if you're even doing anything whatsoever, it needs to be lifting people up and needs to be making them feel okay. Live and Let Die? Are you kidding me? I did not know about that until you just played it.
Well, I just saw it coming in from Ralph. She just sent it to me. And
wow.
I'd like to be shocked. I'd like to be surprised. I'm just disgusted.
Oh my gosh. I would love to be surprised again in my life, but every day I wake up and I'm no longer surprised. It's just more of the awful.
Precisely. So yeah. What are you, tell me about your reality out there, Parson. What's it like for you?
Hey, so I am.
Did you go out there for a job?
Yeah. I'm born and bred Virginian, of course, Appalachian to the core. But I moved out here a little over a year ago. I've been working in television and some film and different projects. I love L.A. and L.A. has been pretty kind to me. So, yeah. But everything is on either canceled, on hiatus, or confused right now. The industry is pretty much at a standstill. So I'm sequestered with a few of my friends in a house where we have a production studio. Which I'm so grateful for, because we get to produce content still. And so we're producing an animated series called Two Birds, One Stoned.
Stoned.
Two birds, one stoned. Only one of the birds is stoned.
Yes.
Working with some great people. We've got, one of our consultants is, one of the creators of The Thornberries and Rugrats. We've been kind of working on pitching this for a while, and the bad news is that we all got laid off. But the good news is that we're, using this time to work on projects. We've also got a new. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. I need to apologize to everybody, because these two dogs
will not behave.
Did I mention I'm sequestered?
don't make me pull this apartment over, you two.
The beagle and the poodle just got into it while I was trying to be professional.
please don't worry about being professional here. We're just buddies.
Let me
ask without you giving away any sensitive information or secure undisclosed locations. What part of town are you in?
Oh, well, right now I'm very fortunate to be just outside of LA. I stay in North Hollywood usually, but when we realized that things were shutting down and we were going to all have to sort of shelter in place, I hold up with a couple of my friends, and because we just decided we would take this opportunity by the horns. So yeah, I'm good. I miss the mountains so much. There is a part of me that wishes that I had taken that first flight, you know, back to Virginia. But even going back now, it would be.
Well, in both instances, you've got sane and competent governors in both states. However, I think Ralph Northam's going to have more challenges in Virginia because there are still more maggots there, you know, the Trump types in the legislature. They're not a majority anymore, but they're still noisy enough to be a problem. On the other hand, I think California is getting it as they're as close to getting it right or more right than just about any other state in the union.
I'm going to make a joke and then I'm going to be really serious, because the governor of California obviously uses much better tooth whitener than Ralph Northam, but they are both concise and I appreciate both of their efforts and what they're doing. I feel like Northam is in a difficult place because Virginia is we can be a handful. You know, we might not be blue. We might be blue today or not tomorrow. You know, like you never know what you're going to get from a Virginian. So I applaud him for his work. I'm also, you know, offer my fair share of scrutiny when I feel it's necessary. But so far, like I think that he's handled it pretty well. I feel safe in California, and I hope that other governors and local officials just try to think about the people that are living in their communities. And we are all suffering from the economy, and we got to find creative ways to stabilize the economy without endangering people and endangering community health.
You know, some of the things you brought up, these are not insoluble questions. We can take care of our communities if we choose to take care of our communities. We can do what Canada is doing, $2,000 a month as long as the thing continues. That's not going to ruin Canada. Canada is not going to stop being there just because they decided to take care of their citizens.
And, you know, for someone like me, that's like, oh, my God, that's so much money. But also it's barely enough. For, you know, like, you know, in comparison to how hard people work and the hours they put in to make their regular wages, like, you know, like it's just a helpful come up. It's not even like the full living wage.
No. But in terms of helping people keep the power on,
keep
on the table,
of course.
Yeah, we could be doing a lot more than we're doing. But we have this, and you know what I mean by it. We have this Calvinistic approach to culture, society, and humanity that says a little, you know, a little suffering, and sometimes a lot of suffering. Well, it builds character. That's what it does. It builds character.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm sure you have had conversations like this where you have, I don't know if you, I find myself holding back, punching people in the face more often than not when I talk about the issues that I cover and have, like, worked on and the campaigns that I've worked with. And so many folks over the years have said, well, some people have to suffer for the rest too. And I'm like, it's like that meme where like Batman smacks Robin.
Yeah. Have you ever read Ursula K. Le Guin, the great science fiction fantasy author, just passed away a year ago?
I don't read, but I could have my assistant do it.
There's a short story out there. Hell yeah. Okay. That's good. That's good. That's a very LA thing. That's a very LA thing you just said there, Parson. You've been there a while now, I can tell. There's a short story she wrote called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas.
Okay.
And I highly recommend it because it never fails to speak to me whenever I think of these choices that we make that enforce cruelty on people who have no say in the matter.
The Ones Who Walk Away from
Omelas.
How do you spell Omelas?
O-M-E-L-A-S.
See, Bob, I do take notes. I'll check that out. That sounds great.
It'll lay a good 15, 20 minutes low for you. I mean, we're just marking time here for a little while, aren't we?
Yeah. Do you want to open a can of worms?
Sure.
Have you seen the new Michael Moore documentary?
People have been telling me to watch it.
And I think you probably should.
I probably should. I just have to be in the right mind space for it because there's.
I wasn't prepared for it. To be honest, I wasn't. I didn't know it was really in production, and it just came out. And I know almost everybody in the documentary.
Really?
I think you might also.
Wow. Okay. All right. You piqued my curiosity.
So maybe we can revisit that. I think we have a mutual friend, Karen Strickler, who used to.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Karen, who used to host a show in the D.C. area. And she's been to many events with us and we've stayed in touch for years. I just did an interview with her husband, who is a professor.
Alan Lichtman.
Yep, Alan Lichtman. I just did a great interview with him that's going to be on my podcast coming up in the next couple of days. But
which you will now tell people how to get.
Oh, right. By the way, guys, I have a podcast, and I don't even know how you're going to get it. But I'm going to share it with you because the little guy that does our technical stuff is totally going to send it to you.
Awesome.
Anyway, my good friend Karen was in this documentary. She didn't even realize that she was going to be. We got a lot of mutual friends in this documentary, and it exposes it talks a lot about how there was misuse of materials, misuse of funds, and how the big greens may have. It's one of those. It's a delicate subject for somebody that has been following the environmental justice movement for a long time, like I have and you have.
I've delivered my fair share of Jeremy ads against the big greens from this microphone.
Of course. Yeah, I know. So it's an interesting watch, and I have friends at the Sierra Club, which is one of the organizations that are called out. Also, 350.org is called out. And
wow, it almost feels like Michael Moore is catching up to me, but that happens. that happens a lot on this program. I remember, because I hang on to things. I remember July of 2012, the derecho had just ripped through here. We were 3 weeks without electricity and 100-degree heat.
It's my birthday.
We were 3 weeks without electricity and 100-degree heat. The horn was down, couldn't broadcast. We were driving miles and miles and miles just to fill up 5-gallon gas cans to keep the generator going. Drove 200 miles round trip to get a generator.
Oh, my God, that was a crazy time. That was awful.
And in the middle of all of this, a mutual friend of ours informed me that the next day, 350 was going. Now, bear in mind, you know what it was like. There was I knew one woman. She was the aunt of somebody that we both know. Up in her 80s, lived a mile from the Greenbrier.
Mm-hmm.
And was sweltering in that 100-degree heat. There was not a cube of ice to be had anywhere. And I got word that on the Capitol Plaza the next day, 350.org was going to melt a giant ice sculpture to prove that global warming is real.
Yeah, it's
had a fit.
I'm sure I didn't hear. I mean, I was at that same time, I didn't have any freaking electricity. So, but like, I didn't know that, but that is just, it's a difficult spot when you want everybody to be, when you want to bring unity and solidarity.
Yeah.
And hold that together.
And certain people want that, unity and solidarity too, but only if they're the ones who are controlling all the unity and all the solidarity.
That's work. That's not how it goes.
I mean, do you disagree? I mean, it's.
No, I agree. I think I agree with
you. Oh, and by the way, just a quick addendum. Lady B, who was on before you, she's a DJ too, so she gets it. And she just sent me an email saying, dude, I'm about 5 to 7 minutes behind, but that wasn't Paul McCartney and Wings. That was the Guns N' Roses remake of Live and Let Die.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
But, and Lee in New York said, Trump would hear that song and think of himself as Bond, James Bond.
Right. No, Bob, I agree with you. I think you and I have, even when we vary in certain, different ways, like I always find a common ground with you. And I think that that's so important for everybody. We just like, there is a way to carry yourself. There is a way to communicate with people where you don't have to be, I mentioned earlier on your chat room, I said that the other people cuss too much, but I'm going to say you don't have to be a fucking asshole.
Exactly. It reminds me, there's a line in Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises that he puts in, that he has Lady Brett Ashley, he has her speak the line. She's talking to the protagonist and, they're lost generation, post-World War One, all of that.
Mm.
And she's got this line and it's always stuck with me. And you just reminded me of it when you said, you don't have to be a fucking asshole.
That my words reminded you of something, go ahead with
information. No. I'm glad it reminded me. And you don't have to worry about fun words here because we use a lot of them. Because sometimes they're the only words that will do. And there's that there's that study out there that says that people who swear tend to be actually more intelligent.
Oh yeah, we're smarter.
Yes,
so good for us.
So what? What Lady Brett Ashley says is, not being a bitch is what we have instead of God.
Oh my God, that is such a powerful statement. Can she be my Facebook friend? I think she's amazing.
But not being a bitch is what we have instead of God. From The Sun Also Rises, 1920.
That's a statement.
Yeah, it covers a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it frees up a whole lot of emotion.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree.
Feel free to hang on to that. Well, Parson, it has been absolutely delightful talking with you. We're We're a few minutes over time now, but I'm not on anybody's clock, so I was happy to be able to carry the conversation a little further. Please don't be,
yeah, man,
please don't be a stranger, and make sure I find out how to get your podcast to the Horn Family Community Congregation.
I'm going to send you all the information. I'm going to trick you into being on my podcast, and I'm going to say goodnight, and I love everybody who's listening, and I'll always got a warm place for you, Bob, in my heart.
Oh, as I do you, Parson, as I do you. We've got a lot of shared miles on a rocky road. And it's,
yes, sir. And work to do, and we will keep doing it as long as we can. Solidarity, sir.
Solidarity, indeed, my brother. And you stay well, stay safe, stay the hell out of Orange County. Those people are crazy.
I can't afford to go there anyway.
yeah, me neither. Parson Brown, take care, and don't be such a doggone stranger.
I'll be back.
You come back anytime. Anytime the spirit moves you.
I will. All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
And that's my old buddy, Parson Brown. God, how long have I known Parson? 15 years, something like that. Parson is a filmmaker, an artist, and an absolutely implacable foe of the coal industry and of mountaintop removal. Mining in Appalachia. Yeah, he's walked the walk and he talks the talk. So it was great to talk to him. Great to chat with all of you this evening. Thanks for joining in. Thanks for helping keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers at PayPal and Patreon. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Some of you do all three, one or two or the other. Thank you, because you are the happy few. About one person for every 100 in this community actually supports the program and helps keep it going for everybody else. And so I can never say thank you enough. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the chat room. Thank you to pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan. Brother Deacon Asa popped in this evening. Thanks, Asa, into the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Stay home. If you see maggots, go the other way as quickly as you can. Avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.